Emma.
I'm Kiana.
I'm Tanasia.
I'm Lila.
And I'm Badila. And we're
the Perfect 10 After School. And we love to be part of WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. Celebrating creative community radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Yay!
On Wednesday, May 18th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including Mayuko Fujina from Saugerties. She will be live in Accra at 11 a.m. with her Mirage Station show. Then at noon, we go live to Catskill, where Spike Priggen has a record shop on Main Street and broadcasts live from there for 2 hours, calling it the Bedazzled Radio Hour with all sorts of rock, pop, soul, and more. At 4 p.m., we're live from Acro with the WGXC Afternoon Show. At 7 p.m., we're live from New York City, simulcasting from WBAI, the Off the Hook Show from the Hacker Quarterly 2600, all about technology. Then at 8 p.m., we're live from Hudson with Rock and Roll High School and Peter McPartland and Anya Kanevskaya. At 10 p.m., we're live from Ulster County with Jeff Economy and the Snack Point Charlie Show. And at midnight, we're live from Ulster County for another 2 hours with Go Go Kitty, simulcast from Radio Kingston from Peter Aaron on the radio at 90.7 FM WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Good evening and welcome. You are tuned in to 90.7 FM and I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, the host of Race Talks on WGXC, where we have a very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. Why do we talk about race? To combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. Bottom line is you'll find us keeping it real here on Race Talks, where no topic is taboo. Normally, you will hear a guest of mine say those last words. But tonight, we have taped this show in order for my guest to be on, and you're going to really enjoy this particular guest talker, who is Shersha Mizan. S-H-E-R-S-H-A-H, Mizan, M-I-Z-A-N, for those of you who may want to look him up to learn more. He is an active member of the Bangladeshi community in the Columbia and Greene counties, which WGXC services. So how fitting it is that we are so honored to hear from him as we recognize May as Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, AAPI for short. Now, this is one of several ethnic heritages and cultural months that we do celebrate in America. And in particular, with this month, is that it represents so many different people, so many different nationalities, that where people have come from to be an American. And that's some of what we are discussing tonight. One of our segments, which is the normal Q&A, is who is an American? And Shersha will relay his story of coming to the United States and becoming a naturalized American citizen. He also shares his views on having to check the box. You know, the box. Check one. You always have to when you're filling out government forms, and now almost every form. His answer is one that I find thoroughly enlightening, so please stay tuned. And our top term phrase. Good evening and welcome. Our top term phrase is coming up because we had a break in the line. So I am going to share that with you. Stop AAPI hate. Stop AAPI hate is a coalition of, in connection with Asian American Civil Rights and Equality Network. And so later you're going to hear several comedians from the AAPI community to showcase that we can have fun and the difference and be entertained by our differences. That's a better way of saying it. All right, so I'm going to introduce you now. So stay tuned for that. So right now I'm introducing live on tape, Shersha Mizan. Shersha, take it away.
Oh, hello everyone, and thank you, Kim, to invite me today to come here and talk about. And my name is Shersha Mizan. I live in Hudson since 2000. Honestly, I came from Bangladesh to JFK, from JFK to Hudson, and I'm still in Hudson. I have a father of two children, my son and my daughter. My son goes to Siena College, and my daughter goes to Albany Shaker High School. I'm a former alderman, city of Hudson. I'm still serving Hudson City Democrat. And I'm a member of Bangladesh community in Hudson, New York. And my whole life, really, I expand to with people to help them, and I love it.
That's so wonderful, and that's why I think you said yes to meeting with me here, because the Bangladesh community in Hudson has grown tenfold. I mean, when I was growing up here in Hudson, there were very few Asian Americans in Hudson. I think they were coming from the Chinese ethnicity. I don't think we had anybody here from Japan. I would like my listeners to know a little bit about Bangladesh, and then you can share a little bit about how you see things here in the United States, okay?
Well, the first of all, I came in city of Hudson in 2000. That time, the total Bengali people was in Hudson 78 or 80 people total, not a family, people.
Okay.
Now we have close to 700 people, which is came from Bangladesh.
And in a population at 7,000, that's a good 10%.
And more people may be on the way.
Okay.
and Bengali people, and they are like, you know, they come here, this is a nice, diverse city, they like it. And another thing is they like to work, there is opportunity to work also, and life is not very expensive in here if you compare with New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is our community raise their children the way it's supposed to be, with respect, religiously, culturally, all together, bonded, family bonded.
So in Bangladesh, which is a what size would you say Bangladesh is compared to Pakistan or India? Much smaller?
Bangladesh is smaller than Pakistan and India.
Okay.
Bangladesh is a little smaller than, I believe, New York State.
Ah.
But too many people.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when they say, India population is in the billions, it's not...
India is almost 30 times than Bangladesh. It is a huge country.
Okay. So to receive... what about the language Bengali? Is it close to that of Pakistani and some of the Indian languages?
One part of the India is our language is Calcutta.
Oh, Calcutta. Okay.
Calcutta,
that's
is
a major
city. They speak Bengali.
Okay.
And Bengali language is number 8 of the language in the world, I believe.
Of most spoken languages?
And Bengali is one of the international languages now.
Wow.
Yes.
So that would mean we should, in the United States, and especially here within the county of Columbia County or Greene County that we service here with WGXC, we should start seeing teachers teach Bangla.
Bangla.
Right.
Yes.
What about your children, if you don't mind me asking?
No,
Do they speak it? Do they write it, read it?
My son and my daughter learned some Bangla writing and reading while Hudson Library had that opportunity from our community. One of the gentlemen, Mr. Ghazi Abdul Rashid, he was teaching them, and some reason the program was closed. So there was no opportunity to learn more about it. And I hope if library think about it to do it again, and I will help myself to them to organize that program again.
That's great, because I also work with young people, and I was teaching English as a second language formerly, so I know the value of learning multiple languages, and especially not just speaking, but being able to facilitate in the reading and the writing of it. Then you rely on other people to help you process it, and sometimes their biases get put in. I talked to a student who said he can speak it, but he didn't feel like there was any need to actually read or write it, because speaking was totally and perfectly fine. And I gave him a scenario where if he was to go back to Bangladesh, visit relatives who remain there, what if they sent you a text? And how do you communicate that in writing?
The main thing is anything you know that'll work for you lifetime, some point, somewhere, while it is needed. I learned that from my father.
Wonderful.
My father advised me, or read the newspaper every day. You know how it's going on in the world. Learn anything you can. It will work for you someday, somewhere. You don't know in the future where you're going to be, what are you going to do.
Now, when you were reading the newspaper, you were reading it in Bangla. When did you learn English?
I was in Bangladesh. I was in a school and a college. And in Bangladesh education, English has a subject and is a compulsory you have to have.
Oh, so it's a required second language.
English, most of the people who went to school and a college, they had to have English. So it's a basic English everyone had, but the speaking is totally different than you read the book.
I was going to ask you about that because I was expressing to the student who is in high school, he's 11th grade, mm-hmm. and I was asking, you know, if English was a requirement in Bangladesh, was it a British system? Because,
yes.
you know, England was a ruler over India, and that in that neighborhood, I would think that people would look to British English as opposed to American English. So what English was acceptable or taught in your college?
In Bangladesh is that Southeast Asia, that area, India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Bhutan, Maldives.
Maldives, wow.
Yeah, most of the people follow British English because, well, it was under Britain a while ago. And so were we
a while ago.
It's still the same, like our accent, our pronunciation, and grammatical, everything is still following, like, you know, what Britain lived for us in those areas, geographical area. But in here, like the pronunciation and speaking is totally different because in the United States, English is mother language. And I learned in my life, every mother language has their own version.
Mm-hmm.
In like a Bangladesh, the one language, only Bengali, right?
Mm-hmm.
Each district had their own style, talking or pronunciation. Every district.
So it's the same everywhere where you have.
Exactly.
In Germany, there's what they call Plattdeutsch, which is the lower level, Platt meaning flat or lower. And then you have Hochdeutsch, meaning high. In America, too, we have that, or we did, where we have the North or in the Midwest English, standard American grammatical English, and then we have the Southern English, which is more of a twang and a sound. And, you know, it's a sing-song voice, and they drop a lot of the ending consonant sounds. But and there was a thought that a bias towards it, where if you didn't sound a certain way, you didn't sound educated, or that you were worthy of certain jobs. So people would try to drop their accents, even in America. Let me ask you: did you find that? I'm sure you did it because you're talking here on Race Talks, yay. But did you find that as an issue when you came here? Did you think, would people understand me? Will I feel accepted? How have you felt about that?
While I came, so it was winter time. And it was when I get out from JFK, and those white stuff falling in my head. Like, what is?
Did you just say the white stuff?
Yeah, which is, I even don't know what is that time.
Wow.
No English, nothing.
Ah.
Then I was asking my uncle, what is this? He's telling me snow. I'm not very familiar with those things. So, and I came after a week later, I came to the street. It was chilly, winter time, but it was sunshine. And I saw a gentleman walking in the street, and I want to say something to him, but I don't know how to, what I'm going to say and how to say to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, well, let me start something. So he looks like a Muslim guy. He got a beard, like, you know, most of the Muslim, when they get certain age, they keep their beard and, you know, so I thought he's a Muslim maybe. So I was telling him, assalamu alaikum.
And you're Muslim?
I'm Muslim.
Okay.
And he's telling me, what? I learned one thing. Then I was telling him, sorry. I realized he's not a Muslim.
Mm.
So I learned another word. So every day I start learning. And when I start working, so I start following people, how they are speaking and what they are meaning while they're speaking.
Ah, yes, because we don't always say what we mean.
Right.
Right, we have a lot of colloquialism.
But I can read, I can write, I understand what you're reading and what you're meaning. I cannot tell. So, and then 2 months later, I realized what is important in this country. Your driving license, you have to drive,
yes,
and you have to speak. I need something from you. If I cannot speak and I can't explain you how you can help me, you can't, because you don't know what I need. And in country area or upstate New York, a lot of city or town don't have a bus service like New York City.
Buses, you mean?
Yeah.
You were saying?
Yeah.
So, like, so, mass transportation.
Yeah.
Lacking.
So, then what you need? You need a driving license to maintain your job, your shopping.
Your freedom.
Your necessity.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, I'm like, I have to learn driving. So, and there is a process. I start, went to DMV and get my learner, then, community was so bonded still. I don't go to the driving school. My community people who drive that time, they teach me.
Now, when you say your community people, are you referencing people in the Bangladesh community?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Bangladesh.
And at that time, you said it was like 80 people?
Around 80 people.
And
2001.
Okay. And how enmeshed were you? Like, you came over and you, like, was, is there a certain place in Hudson where you can go, or in Columbia County or in this area where you can go and be a part of the Bangladesh community?
When I came, the question mainly, so many times people asking me, how do you know Hudson? How you came in Hudson? Yes. My uncle.
I asked that of everybody, because Hudson, you know, it's still a population of 6,000 to 7,000 people.
Right.
So it's like, how do
my
you know?
My uncle was lived in Hudson. So
for how long?
My uncle came in Hudson, I believe, 1996.
Okay.
Somewhere like that. So that's how I came in Hudson.
Okay.
He picked me up from JFK and bring his home. And after that, I'm still in Hudson. I don't go nowhere. And I fell in love with Hudson, honestly.
Now, so you have children. So
they were born in here.
Okay. So you've met and had a whole life here, and so did you end up deciding to go back at all?
In Bangladesh?
Yeah.
I'm a U.S. citizen now.
Okay, so let's talk terms, because I like how you said, I'm a U.S. citizen. I'm looking across from you, and you're smiling. I'm a U.S. citizen now.
That meaning, while I'm a U.S. citizen, and my son and my daughter was born in here, and they are not going to go back to Bangladesh. That meaning I can't go to Bangladesh. I love them.
So let me ask you about the, how do you say you are? I mean, the terms you use to identify yourself in a cultural way. Are you Bangladeshi American? Are you American? Are you Asian American? What would you say the right, not acronym, the right, adjective is, describe who you are culturally or ethnically in America?
Ethnically, when I fill up any paper and asking me, like, you know, I'm a American, Asian American, those type of question, I have to have marked Asian American, because I'm not a born citizen. I'm a naturalized citizen. So there is a two kinds of citizenship in this country. One is when you born citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is when you came with residency, visa,
mm-hmm,
some point you in here.
HB1.
And then lawfully you get interviewed by INS. And then if you pass the interview and your background is good, they'll give you citizenship.
So are you saying
naturalized?
So you're seeing Asian American as being a sign of being from an Asian country?
Yes.
With Bangladesh being part of an Asian
country, yes,
geographically.
Yes.
So you would check that box?
Yes.
Do you feel any negativity checking the box, or you're just like, okay, there's a box, I'll check it, no problem, moving on?
I don't feel negativity because when I took my citizenship, I respect American constitutions. So the Hoosier Constitution says I have to follow that. I have to follow the procedure which it is saying. So it's not only me. There's so many options, like you are, like, you know, not only Asian, there's a more other option in there too. So, and
African American, white,
yes,
Latino,
yes.
Right.
So it's not me only. Number one. Number two is, like, there is a difference of, like, if you are born US citizen, you can run for president. If you are not born citizen, you can't. I believe those are the reason those type of questions come.
I like that idea, and talking to you makes me see that there's some cultural nuances, some flavors that you're going to retain.
Yes.
So share with me and the listeners how you see about family and the existence of how, you know, in a lot of Asian cultures, you know, family is supreme, you know, taking care of first your immediate family and then your community is really important. So how do you see those things being a little bit differently here as an American?
Okay, first of all is America built by diverse people, I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And who is American? There's a big question there.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked one of my friend while ago, and he is telling me as a friendly, if you consider to be American, which is Red Indian.
So if you're considered to be an Indian, American,
which is a Red Indian.
Ah, an Indian.
Yes. And after that, he is telling, like
a Native American Indian?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he is telling, like, you know, in like I'm a citizen, and now, but my son is a born citizen. After two generations, they're American these days.
Mm-hmm.
And
culturally American.
Yes, but the culture, like we try to teach our children our culture. They already learn American culture because they go to school in there, they were born in here, raised in here. They already know the American culture.
Mm-hmm.
And any immigrant people, I'm going to say, need to teach their next generation about their culture, because like I have a family back home also.
So your heritage.
So my children needs to communicate with them. They don't speak English. So my children needs to learn my language. I believe it's same with any immigrant people who came in this country, they got children. They need to teach their children different culture, different language, which is our roots. And then nothing wrong to learn something. I don't see anything wrong with that. Like I believe one thing, like, you know, which is our five finger is not a saying. You know why? Because if your five finger is saying, you cannot work with your hand, you cannot grab with the balance something.
So what you mean is if the five fingers on your hand have all the same shapes and sizes, then they wouldn't be able to function.
No.
The way it functions now.
Exactly.
So difference is important.
It's important. So that's why, like, you know, why is not anybody be a president of the United States?
Okay. Yes.
You know what I mean?
So that means in America, having all of the different cultures of the world,
yes,
being present here, coming and still maintaining one's own roots is incredibly important, and it can build up a nation, which
yes,
it has in a sense in the United States.
Yes.
It's been built up because it's a land born of immigrants.
Right. Well,
mostly.
Another culture is like In our country, culture, like, you know, doesn't matter how old is my mom and my dad, that's my mom and my dad. I cannot throw them away nowhere. I have to
and
take care of them.
When you mean throw them away, you mean as they age?
As they age and I got in my family, or I don't care about them, no.
Well, I remember speaking with a Japanese woman who I taught her English to in when I was in California. And she mentioned in her culture, and I'm sure in her culture right now, modern culture, there might be a split. And I'm going to ask you if there's a split in the Bangladeshi culture too, where back in the day, it was one way how women were treated. And now it's very much a different way, probably more modern. But she was saying once she got married, his family, her husband's family, was her immediate family. She basically had to say goodbye to the family that, you know, she grew up with, her mother, her father, her sisters and brothers, and her sole focus then became her husband's family. And that even when her mother got sick, because her husband's mother was sick, she had to stay and take care of the husband's mother and could not reach out and take care of her own mother. So when you, and that, so to me, I would think of that being an Asian culture where the elderly are important, you know, and are cared for, but there might be a difference in how one goes about caring for one's family based on, you know, who one marries and genders.
So that is
and
it.
Can I just add one thing? Because I know we haven't talked about it, and I kind of want to make sure we bring it up a little bit to share a little bit about your Muslim religion too, because that's part of who you are, how you identify in your culture. And I know that there's a mosque being built in the center of Hudson on Columbia Street, which is a street that I grew up on. So I think it's so excellent that you know, the building is great. So I want you to be able to bring all that together.
Okay. So culturally about the parents is important for son or daughter, doesn't matter. But the system is in our country, even most of the time Southeast Asian, that geographical area, when like, you know, women get married, they don't live with their parents anymore. They go to their husband house, they stay with the husband forever. Again, her father got a son, maybe not. If he got a son, father got a son or mother got a son, son is getting married the other woman and bringing another one in home.
Ah, okay. So that was the reason why having sons are important for moms, so that
mom
can
dad,
stay,
yes.
stay, you know, be taken care of
and,
in the future.
And those
okay.
both, like the son bringing one from somebody's house, and daughter is going other house, both women knows one thing, they got a double parents now.
Okay.
In-laws are considered to be a second parents for man or woman. So for example, if some man, mother-in-law and father-in-law don't have a son, should be take care of that in-laws. Is not, if it is possible to keep them with them, even better, because the parents who raised that woman with their love and respect and money-wise and everything, and after their daughter got married, she had to go with the husband. And who had for those parents? Only God, nobody. So that woman's husband should have think, hey, listen, I don't have anybody to take care of my mother-in-law and my father-in-law, so I should have take care of them. Talk to the wife, how this can be work out. Also needs to take care of his mother and father too. So it needs to be work out. It's a rare case, don't have a son. Recently in Bangladesh, parliament passing a law about a children of, which means most of the time son, don't take care of their mother and father while they're alive. they have to be punished and fined by that court.
Can you imagine something like that happening in the United States?
I'm not sure. See,
because we have systems that we have insurance, right? We have an outside
It's different culturally and everything. Let me tell you one thing. I'm in United States 22 years and I'm in Hudson 22 years. And I see when kids got 18, mom and dad telling, oh, you are old enough to buy yourself. Don't stay with us. Get the hell out of here. Blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
And then,
but a lot of them stay on the couch.
Yeah. And a lot of way, when son is 18, he's telling, I'm by myself. I'm not going to stay with you guys. This and that. I got a job and I'm fine. I will live with myself or I'll live with my girlfriend or wife, whatever it is. No. I don't believe that personally, because since I was born to until I'm 18, which I'm talking about, I'm 18, who raised me?
Mm-hmm.
How hard it was for them. How much love they spend behind me. Can I pay off that love? I don't think so.
So you're saying being in close proximity helps in the caring for the family or keeping the family unit?
Yes.
Close and secure.
Doesn't matter how big I am, how much money I have, the parents who raised me to until I'm here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I should take care of them, because when I was not able to do anything, who I have that time? Who I was asking when I needed $5? Who I was asking, I want a lollipop? Who I was asking, I'm not feeling good? Who rubbed my head when I was 10 years old while I have a big headache? Now they are old. Why I have not to take care of them?
So you're saying really that parents owe their children that kind of life where they feel warm, taken care of, protected.
Yes.
And then that value gets transferred to that young person, and then that young person feels that way and stays to do the same for the parents. But that is a cultural thing, or is it a religious thing?
In Bangladesh,
what is that?
I'm going to say still 80% is the same way. 20% sometimes, you know.
That's always like,
I say five fingers is the same.
Five fingers, sorry.
Right. Another thing is like, yeah.
But is that also a religious aspect?
It's come from religious also, and our Imam explained a lot of from the Holy Quran and from this, is telling to take care of your parents. It's come from religious now in our culture also. It's related. Like your body organ, one related to the other.
Right.
Same thing. And you know what? Honestly, I read the Holy Quran.
Mm-hmm.
I read the Bible some.
Okay.
I read the Gita some.
The Gita too.
Yes.
Wow.
I read those.
Now, explain for my audience, what religion is the Gita?
Hindu.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and in my understanding, I don't see any religious book is telling you to do something bad. No.
Mm-hmm.
I do personally bad, that's my responsibility, is not religious responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a religious bad, it's a person bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to blame to no religious. You have your freedom to choose which religious you're going to practice.
And that would be the same for a culture, right? That one person does not represent an entire culture, like, or community. And that's a question I'm asking.
I'm gonna ask, like, you know, most of the people believe their culture and also religious. Some people always defend again.
Five fingers
is not same because of the balance out.
Right.
So
let me just make sure. When you're saying five fingers in this case, you're saying that there should be five different religious practices.
No, No, it meaning I was meaning about if you make an ornament by the gold, you cannot make an ornament by the gold when it is like, you know, 100%. You have to be add, I forgot the English name is called, 10% or 20% some metal thing.
Like aluminum?
Yeah, something to make it stronger and make it like, you know, nicer and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is 100%.
Ah, okay.
Yes, nothing is 100%.
That's
and
true.
And also, we do made a mistake in our religious telling. If you made a mistake, whoever you did, either your God or a person, say sorry and tell them, forgive me, you will get a forgiveness.
Well, I like that. I mean, I didn't think we were gonna go into this, and you know, I don't wanna be remiss in looking at the community at large in America, the Asian American population, where people have, you know, just outright been despicable towards an Asian person just because they looked at them and thought, hey, they're Asian and we're going to do something horrible to them. And then of course with 9/11, people who were practicing Muslims were also treated like they shouldn't exist on the planet, and certainly not in America, and treated badly by a few. But just sometimes a few makes it really bad for a majority. So what I'm hearing you saying is that you personally, who study Muslim, you follow the Muslim religion, you are actually looking to see connections in other religious authorities by looking at their religious texts. So that basically you're very open, and
I am.
A religious follower, that's what you feel that everyone should be.
Well, let me tell you my experience in this country. When I was in here, I was working. A lot of time I was walking to work, come back home work. I'm walking. I don't have a driving license. I cannot drive. So many people help me, give me a ride. They're not a Muslim. How I can blame Christian
people
for
that? The color of their
sometimes black, sometimes white.
Skin tone. Okay.
Yeah, sometimes black, sometimes white.
So across the board,
yeah.
You felt a connection, positive.
The bottom line is the main religious is humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main religious.
Amen.
Doesn't matter what,
yes.
Where you believe your God, if you help those people who need help, that's the big religious. And God was telling, when I was 8th grade, in our religious class, God was telling, I mean, my teacher was telling, you can feed the God.
Feed the God. Oh, explain that real quick.
Yeah. And young boy, I am 8th grader. I'm like, how the hell? I'm going to eat Allah. Right? I'm like, so how? He's not a human like us. Then my teacher was explaining me. A hungry man came to you and asking for food. If you have ability to feed him. God is telling, I was with him. You feeding my hungry man, that means you feeding me. That's how we can help in this country, in this world, each other, which is humanity is a big religious.
Well, I love that. And I'm going to say thank you for feeding me, because I love the five fingers and some other things you say. It's so great that you said it on air, and to my listeners, I'm sure that they're there applauding a lot of what you said, because it takes a person to really share their own story for people to make it real for them. You know, we see things on TV and the news, and it's about others, but here you are, a member of our community, an active member of the community, and for that to come on and share a little bit of who you are with us, that's really food for us,
thank
our
you.
Soul, especially what you said. And being that Mother's Day is tomorrow, what you're saying is also really important. Well, I shouldn't say it's tomorrow. We're doing this interview in advance. So it's the 6th. Well, it's a Mother's Day on Sunday. So I would think that many mothers would love what you're saying too, to have people, their children taking care of them.
About the Mother's Day, I'm going to say, Happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers in the world.
We have to say it in the past because it's going to be aired afterwards.
And another thing is, I'm going to say, there are the three things you cannot replace in your whole life. Mother, father, and water. Cannot replace. You can't replace your mother. You can call so many women mom, is not your mother. You cannot replace that. You cannot replace your father also. And when you're thirsty, whatever you drink, water is different than anything else.
Well, that is another food for thought that one should keep with them. Share out any information that you want us to know about the community in which you're a strong member of, that maybe we could also be supportive of your community. Anything going on that we should be aware of that's happening in the Bangladeshi community in the future?
In Bangladesh community really is, in our community, most of the people are very focusing at this moment to their children to make them educated in this country. Also, and they are teaching by our imam in the mosque about our religious, and we do some cultural program by the river also. So we are trying to teach everything our children.
Okay, so
about the cultural, about the religious, and which they have to be a educated person in this country. There is a lot of opportunity you can build your children for the future. And one thing I want to say to all the parents who are listening right now, a children goes to school for 6 to 8 hours. The rest of the time they are in home. So every children got a two type of parents. One is home parents, which important and they was stay with them. Another one is for 8 hours, second parents in the school, which is teacher. So I hope every parents will teach their children to listen to the teacher. And that's how, if those children are like, you know, whichever you twist them, it's going to be twisted that way. So if kids get teach from home and school same way, it will be better for them to make themselves be a better person and educated person. That's my request to all parents. Also, teacher who is listening now, think about the teacher. When kids goes to school, you, whoever teacher is their parents that time, you have to love them like your kids. When they come back from school, and parents needs to aware of like what you learn today, this, that, you know what I mean, and need to know stuff. And
so you want them to follow up,
yes,
and be supportive of what's happening in one environment that their child is in the school with their school parents, in your words,
yes.
And the respect is that they follow up and make sure that what happens in the classroom is conducive to the environment at home. And the parents and the teachers should also recognize that culturally and how the student is at home, and be respectful of the parents at home in the job that they're trying to do, it, when it's of respect.
Yes, because kids don't lie. Most of the kids, I'm going to say all of them, they don't lie. If you're asking, hey, what happened to your class? They're going to tell you everything truth. So if you are a parent, you see something he did wrong, teach them right there, no, you cannot do this or you cannot do that. Explain, you gotta do this, this, this way. That's how we can build our children for future wealth in this country.
I like that. I'm going to piggyback on that and say the word is advocacy.
Yes.
We have to be advocates for the children.
Yes.
If something's not right in the home, mm-hmm. teachers are aware of it. They need to be advocates for the child. If something's not happening in the classroom, that needs to be happening. Parents need to be advocates of their children for the teacher in the classroom. So there needs to be that community communication and connection.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes. And especially in, and I say this on almost every show that we air, Hudson School District is fast becoming a 51% student of color. So, and just what you said with the different cultural norms that you value and that you bring to your children and that you want to raise your children on, every ethnic identity has something similar.
Right.
And it's not better or worse, it's just like five fingers, just different. And that they need to all be respected when it's respectful in the community.
Right.
And to show each other that love and respect,
right,
regardless of the other dynamics that are taking place.
Yes.
I love it. I think we can end there. So thank you so much again, Mr. Mizan, for coming. And if I can, may I call you Shersha when I see
yes.
you on the street?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Well,
so,
I thank you also to invite me in here.
Wonderful. We've got to do it again. You know, bring some friends. All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And now the hate.
You know, it's tough when kids call you names. It's always worse when they just use your name.
I knew she was about to get to my name because she had that, like, ethnic pause.
My life now is just a never-ending guessing game of where are you really from.
Open your eyes!
So I don't know how my mom did it, you know what I mean? My mom's amazing, you know what I mean? She had two kids that were living at home at the time when she was, you know, when she was single. You know, and she raised both of us really well. She was amazing. She became the mother and the father. And the reason why I tell you that is because she reminded us every fucking day. There wasn't a day that my mom didn't tell us that. Just me and my sister just playing in the room, playing around, and then my mom would just come into the room and go, I just want you kids to know one thing. I'm the mother. And my mom popped around the corner. She was like, hey, who are you talking to? You don't talk to my children like that. Who are you, huh? I want to speak to the manager. And the guy started making fun of my mom's accent. Oh, you want to speak to the manager? Huh? You want to talk to the manager? And my mom goes, oh, that's funny. You're making fun of my accent? I live in your country and I speak two languages, Tagalog and English. You live here. How many do you speak? One? You're stupid. Something? I can guarantee my mom's right behind me fucking with me. Right? She enjoys that shit. If I'm looking under the couch, I guarantee my mom's right behind me like, oh, what? What's under the couch, Joseph? Is it your kids? Did you lose your kids again?
Well, maybe they walk under the couch like that.
Now I gotta ask my mom for help. That's the worst mistake I can make. Mom, I'm late for work. Do you know where my keys are? Joseph, did you just ask me where your keys are? Isn't that a stupid question? That is a stupid question, Joseph. Excuse me, person that does not drive my car. Do you know where my keys are? That is stupid, Joseph. Why don't you ask me where my keys are? I'll know the answer to that. Go ahead, Joseph, ask me. Come on, ask me right now. Mom, do you know where your keys are? Of course I do. Of course I do, Joseph. I know where my keys are all the time. You know why, Joseph? Because I put them in the same place that I always put my keys. I hang them over here, oh, on this wooden plaque that says key. Joseph, when you lose something, do you use your eyes to look for it? Or do you use your mouth? Because every time you lose something, Joseph, you use your mouth to find something. You can't find anything like that, Joseph. You just walk around, has anybody seen my kids? I don't know where my kids are. I made my way, open your eyes. Look for them.
My name is Tien, but my full name is actually Han Tien, which is spelled H-A-N-H-T-I-E-N. Remember that. I once had a teacher in high school, a white teacher, who was reading through roll call, and I knew she was about to get to my name because she had that, like, ethnic pause. And before I could say anything, she looked at those letters, H-A-N-H-T-I-E-N, and said out loud, "Is there a Hank Tina in the room?" Hank Tina? Is there a Hank Tina here? That means this grown-ass adult who's been given the power to mold young minds looked at those letters, H-A-N-H-T-I-E-N, and thought to herself, this is unfamiliar to me. You know what? I'm just going to combine the nicknames of my favorite two American names, Henry and Christina, Hank Tina. Hank Tina? Hank Tina's not a name anywhere. That's not a name that exists anywhere in the world. Unless you're like the child of progressive parents from small town Missouri, and they're like, get on out there, Hank Tina. Come on, scoot. Find the gender expression that fits you. Scoot, Hank Tina, scoot. You love it when I say scoot. Scoot, Hank Tina.
Surprise. Same language as Chinese. What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for being here. My name is Shang Wang. Sometimes when I tell people that, they're like, wow, that is perfect for pursuing stand-up comedy. I'm like, yeah, but first I was trying to pursue childhood. You know, it's tough when kids call you names. It's always worse when they just use your name.
Want to learn more and help support the AAPI community? Websites are stopaapihate.org and hateisavirus.org. Be sure to check me out, Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talk, every third Tuesday at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM. Next month, June, we'll have to represent Father's Day, the mayor of Hudson, New York, who's the first African-American male mayor. Actually, the first African-American mayor, period. So I'll see you next time. And in the meantime, may you experience much love, beauty, and joy. Good night, and thank you for listening.